Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Dr. Gary Penn. Welcome to my podcast. And, I am here to talk about, you know, psychology is such an interesting thing. We think about it with us trying to unpack things individually with our parents and with our relationships, jobs, careers, anxieties, and fears. And it easily translates to bigger things. Politics, world events, nations, the family of nations, anger and destructiveness, psychosis. What happened in South Carolina, again, it seems like it just impacts our consciousness, our national consciousness. And we are trying to figure out or try to understand. I mean, look, there's a simplistic Occam's razor position of this person was just an angry, lost person and wanted to feel important, and that's and the dark side took over, and the person just murdered a bunch of people. And you know, we can make it simplistic like that, and that these people they're part of society. They've always been part of the society, and they always will be these outliers that are just very violent, angry people. And we just have to suffer through them. I mean, things happen, and we have to suffer through them, and that's it. But I do think there's something more to it. I think there's something that we can't, we certainly cannot stop it. I mean, we're just not there. We're not to a place of evolution in our species where we could literally evolve so far past this dark side of ourselves where we won't have this desire to kill and to destroy and to dominate. I think it's still part of our DNA as people. But I think that we can do something to soften the blow of these kinds of things, to create, like, I don't think you can do something directly, right? I don't think you can do something directly, meaning that somehow we could find out, we could identify these people, and somehow we could prevent these people from being in society and, you know, and things like that. But we can do some things to understand it. So I'm going to talk about this kind of in a circuitous way, not directly, but kind of in a circuitous way. Now, I know that I don't want to, you know, to bend the facts to fit my hypotheses, but because like I said, I think this could happen in good times and great times where people are doing very well, people are doing not very well. But there does seem to be something that is happening in our world. Certainly, let's just keep it to our country right now, where people are feeling very angry and very helpless and very upset. And I'm of the belief that people will take power any way they can get it. Like, it's really kind of hard to keep somebody down. You know, you can keep them down, but even when you're keeping them down, they are doing something down there that is destructive. If I work in a restaurant and I have a manager who's really just so horrible and so hard and really a taskmaster, and, you know, I'm bussing a table and I'm carrying a whole plate of, you know, a whole tray of plates and breaking my back, and the manager is sitting there and looking at me do this and says, hey, Gary, when you put down that big 40-pound tray of dirty dishes, table five needs water, while he's just sitting there watching me, or she's just sitting there watching me, you end up with this rage, like, really? Like, you just can't get up and help me out and water my tables and make my job a little easier? I'm certainly working as hard as I can. But so when someone does that, we We take power. I take power in any way I can, right? Do I steal a steak knife? Do I take home salt and pepper shakers? Do I, give away a glass of wine to a friend of mine or something like that? Do I do what I can to get the power, any kind of power, any kind of revenge that I can? Yeah, I will. Certainly, as children, if we grow up and our parents don't love us and they never have time for us, or they're very harsh on us and they hit us all the time, or they scream at us all the time. And when we're little children, we feel totally helpless. But what do? When we get older, right? We act out. We take drugs. We do badly and poorly in school, and and we get in trouble all the time. So the police or the Or this principal calls my parents and says, "Your son is screwing up." And now my parents have to take off work and come down, and now they have to pay attention to me. Because believe you me, I will make sure that you pay attention to me, one way or the other. So we in some ways we create this kind of way about us where we will not just slowly walk slowly into the night and accept things as they are. We will some way, shape, or form, we will just have to express ourselves. Even if we kill ourselves, we'll show our parents, like, "Screw you, look what you did to me." We live in a, it's been a very interesting 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. What is the world to do when we look at this world and we think it's just not fair? It's just not fair. And people are feeling more and more helpless and more hopeless. Now, I am not in any way defending people who do horrid things. This is not for me to say that they are justified for doing really quite horrible things. But I am saying that when people feel helpless, people feel lost, people feel powerless, they're very open to manipulation. They're very open to cults of personality, of people who tell them, "You are being gypped. You are being taken advantage of. You, poor you, are really, on the outs." And these people are really doing horrible things to you, and you have a right to be horrified and angry, right? So people are very susceptible to that. And then they listen to all of these, people, and there's you could find any voice you want now, electronically, who will support you and who are very articulate people and have these well thought through ideas of how the government and how people and how blacks and how Jews are really, ripping you off and stealing from you and taking your jobs and robbing you of opportunity. So you want to look for someone to blame, and there's always someone to blame. And objectively, sometimes there are people to blame. Sometimes Jews do bad things. Sometimes blacks do bad things. Of course, sometimes white does bad things. But I think what is happening is more and more people, at least as I understand it at this point in my life, are feeling more and more disempowered. Like they just don't have a chance. It's 2015. We're 15 years into the century, right? Almost 10 years ago, we had a financial meltdown that robbed people of their savings and really rocked our country. People lost jobs and have been out of jobs for years. And yet we see what happened. Like, we see what happened in these gigantic corporations where people have made millions of dollars and billions of dollars. We see how 80 people on the planet the top 80 people have more wealth than everyone else on the planet combined. We see that. We see that the bonuses of the Wall Street people, just the bonuses alone, they have, that's more money than all the teachers in our country. We see these incredible amounts of wealth, and we realize that all these people were doing all this manipulation. They weren't building things, they were just doing algorithms, writing code, trading, so their trades get ahead of the other trades so they could gyp people out of money. And they're making tens and hundreds of millions of dollars. And the problem is, no one went to jail. Everyone got off. And here's some guy, you, me, somebody, trying to make $8 an hour, $9 an hour. And you know, when you think about it, $8, $9 an hour, right? $8, $9 an hour. Well, let's say you make $8 an hour and you work a 40-hour a week, you make $320. You get taxed. Maybe you make $250. You're making $1,000 a month. That's what you have to survive, to have a car, have a phone, have an apartment, to go out, take a girl out to dinner. You can take your friends out, take a guy out, do whatever you need to do to live your life. And what happens? You start to feel helpless, small, powerless. I mean, what's your options when you're making $8 an hour? For a lot of people, maybe I can get to $9 an hour, right? Maybe I can get to $9 an hour. All right. That's a couple hundred dollars, whatever, $150 more a month. Maybe that's something. Maybe $10 an hour. Maybe we can grow a little bit. But there's a feeling of rage and helplessness. And then we have all of these, and so when you read about all these things, all these people do things, right? Our nation goes to war. People at the top of the top tell us things that are lies, untruths. And what happens? They live a life of amazing luxury and opportunity. And you know, and I know that if I made such an error, let's say instead of saying we should go into Iraq, I say we should do this intervention, or we should buy this product for our store, and it was such a failure. We'd be fired. We'd have severe consequences. But none of these things happen. So people feel more and more helpless. And then there's plenty of things you could find in the world to support your position, right? You could go onto some website or some podcast and listen to someone say, look what's happening to you. And then when you feel powerless, you look for people who are weaker than you. Really, where you could feel powerful, self-righteous, angry, hateful. In this case, this kid, this 20, 21-year-old kid, a dropout, part-time landscaper. What happened? What happened here is he decided to be against the blacks and the Jews and the immigrants. Right? Those people are the reason. Those people are the reason that I can't. They're taking the women. They're sleeping with the women. They're taking all our jobs. They're doing things that they should never be doing. They're doing all these horrible things. So it's easy to blame them, easy to be on them. And then our country is so, we know what to do. We know in our hearts what should be happened, what should happen in the world. But for some reason, people who are draped in this kind of authority, understanding this kind of powerful, like they're kind of almost iconic people who say, well, the Confederate flag is about our ancestors and it's about people that died how many years ago? Right? How many years ago? 100, 120, 30 years ago? Fighting a cause of taking people from another country and making them pick cotton and plow fields, owning them and say that, well, these people, they were, we want to support them. And then you have, you know, governors and presidential hopefuls say, well, this is a states' rights issue, and people telling you why that your position is right. People on television, people of power agreeing with you. And you start to believe it, and you start to get angry. And you start to really develop a core of hatred. This kid, right? All the energy that he took to listen to people, to find about Rhodesia, to find about what eight means, what the number eight means, and all these things that, you know, code words for Hitler and anger. If he used all of that intelligence and all of that curiosity to go to a junior college, to go to night school, to get a job, to do the job of an 18-year-old, a 19-year-old, meaning you make minimum wage and you go to school and you slowly get better. He could have, you know, he could have gotten somewhere. At 25, 26, he could have graduated with a degree. He could have found different perspectives, but no. We're angry, we're upset. We are frustrated. So many of these people are just so angry that they want to lash out. And then, of course, you know, we are a country that just wants to believe in rhetoric. We don't want to believe in facts anymore. We listen to the NRA and we believe them. It's the cult of personality. All of these people who talk to you and they're so certain and they say that we're right and they're wrong. The NRA tells us that guns, we should protect ourselves. Guns are actually something that keeps the peace. And if everyone had guns, there would be peace. So we're kind of locked in this place. We think about Ferguson. We think about all of these places where people of who are usually most people are just don't have a lot of opportunity, are starting to get very unhappy. It's not that blacks can't be bad. Of course, there are bad blacks, just like there are bad whites and everything else. Of course, I think if you are a police officer and you went into the inner city, into the projects, it would be a very stressful and difficult and intense position to be in, right? Of course, it would be. But we know, at least I know, that whoever we are, we use the tools that are in front of us to get what we need. Some 30-year-old kid working for Goldman Sachs can use a computer to set up a situation where all of a sudden someone has this money and all of a sudden they don't have this money because this person was able to use a computer to manipulate things and get money that way. So they use a computer. The kid in Detroit, the kid in Mississippi, the kid in Alabama, in a poor neighborhood with few resources, uses a gun. And when people see who use a gun for armed robbery and get 20 years, and yet the person who robs 10 times more money, destroys more families with a computer, gets a bonus of $2 million, starts to make people very upset. Why can't we do the right thing? I know the who's to blame in South Carolina. This kid who lost his way, was able to get a gun and killed. I understand that. I'm not one of those people who don't think that personal responsibility is personal responsibility. But that's just one person. I am speaking to, as a country, as a society, we are so attached to the dark side. And this is the price we pay. We are living in a milieu of violence, of really kind of low functioning. Freud talked about Thanatos, the need to destroy, of the anger, of the id. All of these feelings, the shadow, as Jung would say, we are just, as a nation, as a people, we are so locked into that. We go to war we invaded Iraq for what reason? We realize now that it was an unjust war. This isn't a political statement. It's just, we know this history, you know, in 50 years when school kids read about this, history will show that it was an unjust war. And yet we're sitting there with flags on our windshields and we're feeling proud that we won this war, but we don't think about all the Iraqi families that just lost children, people who are walking around, they're blind and crippled and with post-traumatic stress. Sure, these terrorist groups are horrid, and I'm not defending them in the least. But I'm saying we, as a country, we're steeped in violence. We sell semi-automatic weapons. We love violent movies and cultures and things like this. We have every voice on the internet could tell us why we're being oppressed. It's hard. It's hard out there these days. It really is. I don't know how we will turn around as a country, as a people. Right? This kid who killed those 9 people. Okay. Horrible, right? Horrible. And he will probably be put to death or spend the next 60 years of his life in a cell no bigger than a parking space. And that's going to be his world, with a 6-inch window that he could look out and see some clouds once in a while. That's going to be his world for the next 60 years. I mean, think about that. If you want to look at punishment, that's much worse than death, in my view. That's where he's going to be and stay until 2085, 2090. If he lives a good long life, that's what's going to happen to this kid. Going to be stuck there. Fine. I understand that. I get it. And so he's taken care of. He's done. And yet the Confederate flag flies, still flies in South Carolina. Maybe it will be taken down. Still part of Mississippi. We still have people, we still have horrible prejudice in this world. Now, listen, I'm not saying that I'm not prejudiced. I'm prejudiced, right? Aren't you prejudiced, right? Don't we have a degree of prejudice, sexism, what have you, to the degree that we do? I think we all do. I think it's part of just who we are and what we do, that we want people who are the same. We make generalizations of people, right? But if you're making a basketball team and you don't know who's who, you'd probably take the black person over the Korean person or the white person. Now, is that a prejudice? No, I don't think it's a prejudice. I think it's just trying to understand your world. But if you think that someone is less than you overall, valuable in the, you know, to the world and society because of nationality or skin color or sex and sex position, that's a whole different thing. And a lot of people think that. Makes them feel powerful. We will get power any way we can. So I think this is about, from a psychological perspective, yes, this guy was disturbed, sociopathic, angry, and I don't think he's the person we have to really kind of understand per se. I think we have to understand as a country, we have to understand the world that we create, not the sociopaths, not the psychotics, not the people who, but why can I go to a gun store and get an arsenal that is worthy of being in the army? Why can I do that? Why is that allowed? Why do we not sit there and simply read the facts that countries that don't have weapons have better standards of living and less crime and less violence and less death? Why can't we just understand that? Why do we listen to people tell us things when they have an agenda instead of just telling us the truth? Meaning that when I go to a used car lot and the salesman says, "Oh, this car, oh my God, it's the best car ever built," why would I just believe him or her that that car is the best car that's ever built when they're trying to sell me that car and make $3,000 on the sale? Maybe it is the best car, possible. But would I just believe that person? Would I just believe Wayne LaPierre, the president of the National Rifle Association, when he says, "Well, if those church parishioners all had semi-automatic guns, they would have been able to kill this kid"? I guess. But do I want him, a person with so much skin in the game, to tell me why more guns is the answer, who's the president of association that basically is a shill for the gun manufacturers? Why would I believe him? Why don't I just believe what science tells us statistically, that if you have a gun, you're more likely to die from it, or someone you know suppose is more likely to die from it? The countries that don't have so many weapons are actually much better off. You know, people talk about mental illness being the problem with all these mass shootings. No, it's not. It's about the weaponry. We all know this. It's not that mental illness is not part of the problem. But for goodness sakes, there's plenty of mental illness in all over the world. We don't have that, you know, that sewn up. That's only in America do you have, you know, violent people. We have them everywhere. But I can't go get a semi-automatic weapon at the gun store in London. I just can't do that. And there, or Japan. So therefore, per capita, the number of deaths is just so far down. It's not even, it's not a factor in that way. It's much, much, much less. Like 20 times less. I think the statistics are just so high. I think it's 20. We're 20 times more violent than the next country per capita. We are a bloodthirsty country. Since our inception, I forgot how many years ago, 230 or something like that. We've been at war for 220, one war, the other 220 something years of our existence. So it's the weaponry. Imagine what our life would be like, our country would be like, if we had gun laws that were similar, let's say, to other places where you could just buy one gun, one or two guns. A rifle and a handgun shoots six bullets maximum, and that's it. And they have to be registered. Just imagine if that were the case. Imagine how many less deaths there would be in our country. We know this to be true, but we get scared. People tell us the government is going to sit there and dominate you, the government's going to take over. We have to be paranoid of the government. So we're living in such a world of anger and paranoia and fear. So then it starts a feeding frenzy. Well, if the bad guy has a semi-automatic, I need a semi-automatic to protect myself from the bad guy. Because this bad guy is going to try to take whatever I have. That makes a lot of sense, actually. I could see people doing that. So this kid who had nothing found his peeps, found his friends in websites that preach white supremacy, in websites that preach how other people are out to get him, taking advantage of him. He saw it as an existential threat. He needed to feel powerful. In a minute, this kid who had nothing was talked about by the president of the United States. Everyone was on his lips, his name, what he did, what he was thinking, his manifesto, all got read. So he became somebody in an instant. This grandiosity, this understanding of greatness. All these people. So do you really think that we will get to a place where guns will go away? Right? We know, right? People say, well, guns don't kill people. You know, it's just, really? Well, if this kid could have gone to the gun store instead of buying a gun, if he could have got a grenade, my guess is he just would have thrown a grenade in the church. And people will say, well, grenades don't kill people. People kill people. Well, okay, well, let's just give the person grenades. I don't know. I really don't understand the difference between some of those semi-automatic weapons and just throwing a grenade, having a grenade because, you know, I need to protect myself against a horde of people who are trying to attack me. Makes sense to me, given that logic. I know. Psychologically, it's the dark side. It's when you just go to the dark side. You split off your personality. You see these people as all bad. It's a very powerful position when we see something and someone as all bad or all good. George W. Bush had that position. We're going to smoke him out. We're going to get him. Saddam Hussein is a bad guy. He presented him as all bad, a threat. We believed him. Of course, he was our president, so we want to believe our president to tell us the truth. So in South Carolina, the shooter saw people as all bad. All bad. It's easy at that point then to say, okay, if you're all bad, you split people off. Either all bad or all good. And at that moment, okay, I can kill you because you're all bad. You're just bad. So the psychology goes to that place of seeing people as all bad or all good. It's a powerful, powerful place. We listen to people like Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly, we listen to these people wearing suits, expensive tailored suits and ties. We listen to them. Mike Huckabee saying, you know, yes, states' rights, keep things up, get the government out of my business. People who have great esteem in our world, in our country. And we see them as all good. Right? We don't see them as all bad. We don't see like, well, why do people get off for doing bad things? Right? We see these people just, they're all good no matter what they do, right? People still support George W. Bush. People still listen to Sean Hannity. People still listen to Dick Cheney. I don't know. It's heartbreaking what happened in South Carolina. where these parishioners were just praying, being peaceful with open hearts. They seem like all wonderful people. It's so sad what happened in Newtown and Aurora and Columbine. People who are small and helpless and lost and have access to a lot of firepower. Do I think that the cause for all these mass shootings is mental illness? No. I think it's a small part of it. I think the biggest problem is access to weaponry, a culture of all good and all bad. And anyone could just go on the internet and buy bullets and guns. And I don't know. I don't think in my lifetime that we're going to change. But I hope. I hope some way, somehow, that a sense of enlightenment comes to us as a people. And I know, you know, in some ways this may sound political, right and left. In some ways it is. It's not that Democrats have their act together. By a long shot, they don't. The Democrats are horrible on guns, horrible on, you know, Wall Street, of course. We need some kind of revolution in our country where the majority of people, and I think, I really don't know because I don't live in the deep South. I don't live in some of these states where they'll have a podcast, some guy giving a podcast, which is the exact opposite of what I said, I've been saying. So I don't know, but I just think somehow I have to believe in our hearts that most of us know that this is wrong. Most of us know that we should take down the Confederate flag. Most of it, us know that what happened in Florida with George Zimmerman, which I guess was in Trayvon Martin, which was the catalyst for this kid losing his mind. Again, George Zimmerman, a small, you know, man who felt powerful because he was able to carry a gun. Felt powerful. Right. It's what we do as kids when we play out and we act and we buy our guns and we think that we're going to kill a bad, evil person and how that's something that we feel powerful with. You know, it's so much about power. It's so much about, you know, this idea of, if you want to look at it from a male perspective, of the Oedipal position of the little boy rising up, killing dad, possessing mother, being the hero. Really, we don't want to do that. Really, we don't want to kill our own father. We don't want to do that. And it scares us when we think about that. George Zimmerman, why he did what he did, why he became that person of all the things he can do in his life. Very complicated. But there's a micro position and there's a macro position here. The micro position is this poor kid, the upbringing that he had, the sense of being isolated and lost. The macro position is the ability to get firepower as much as he wants, whenever he wants. The macro position is the idea that we are a bloodthirsty country. The macro position is he's in a milieu of living in a state where they're still flying the Confederate flag. Think about that. Really. You could put lipstick on a pig and say it's about, oh, our heritage and all these things. But the truth is it's celebrating a time when states were committing treason and just a horrid way of slavery and think about it. Think about you being taken out of your home and just put in chains and picking in the fields all day. Just horrible. All right. I don't know if I gave any insight here, if what the answer is for this. I do think it's such a, yes, it's a micro issue of this poor kid who's going to probably die, but will spend, I'm sure, years or decades in a, like I said, in a cell the size of a parking space by himself for 23 hours a day, and then maybe have an hour to go for a walk around a chain link fence. Quite horrible. 18 years old. All right. I want to come up with a solution, don't I? I can't. Not today. All right. This is Dr. Gary Penn, and I'm glad that you listened. And we'll talk about something like, who knows, next time. That's not going to be so intense, but I always think this is fascinating anyway. Thank you for listening. Till next time, this is Dr. Gary Penn. Be well.